Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grid Watchers podcast to review the Canadian Grand Prix that happened this evening. And today I'm joined only by Ashley because the other three aren't available, unfortunately. But today's Grand Prix, Ashley may have been the most boring race of the season so far. It seems that all the excitement has just been taken out of F1, and it just gave us a plain piece of bread. It was just awful.
I mean, it's just the tracks, mate, isn't it? All the tracks need changing. It's not the cars at all. No. It's a pretty dire state of affairs. And, we had a few interesting races at the start of the season, and everyone seemed to forget and go, actually, F1's all right. And it's like, well, no, this is just the balance of it. Soon we'll be back to the status quo. And then all of a sudden it's, oh, no, the tires melt. Oh, no, I can't get past. And it's like, well, yes, of course. But obviously, we're getting those rule changes next year, so they can't really come soon enough. But people saw this coming back when the rules were first announced in 2015, but this is the legacy of Bernie, I suppose.
Yeah, it seems that his legacy is still there, even though he's left the sport. It's just very frustrating. And like I said, we saw drivers managing their tires, and because of the aero regs that are coming on the cars, no one could do any overtaking. They said, "Oh, we'll add another DRS zone for more overtaking." I don't think we had one overtake at that section of the track at all. It was hardly any overtaking. That mid stint of the race, I don't, unless there were blue flag overtakes, there was none from what I gather.
There was a period where the F1 Twitter account didn't tweet for about 15 to 20 laps. And I was like, wow, this is dire. This is really bad. And I can't remember the last time we had a, other than 2017 was, I mean, it was all right. But that before, since before 2017, I don't remember the last time we had a boring Canada race. Everyone likes the track. It's really interesting. And instead, my feed was full of Guido van der Garde trying to up his presence, even though he's an also ran idiot.
Yeah, I think it was just, I think there was more enjoyment just looking at my Twitter timeline than actually looking at the actual race, unfortunately. But the tech, we will talk about the race, of course, mainly the start because that's where more of the action actually happened. And of course, we'll talk about the Lance Stroll Brendan Hartley crash that happened at turn. Well, it started about turn four, and ended at turn six. And Lance Stroll seemed to lose the back end, overcorrected, drifted wide where Brendan Hartley was, and then sort of Brendan Hartley was sort of drifting on the wall, and then it all went Pete Tong and both cars on the wall. And yeah, I don't know whether it was a Williams or there was a dirty part of the track that Lance Stroll hit, but it was just such a silly crash to have on lap number one, really, wasn't it?
I mean, it was pretty dire. Now, one of the problems with the Williams is they're okay. Their downforce is fine in a straight line, and of course, when they're in the wind tunnel, they only do downforce in a straight line. And so everyone was quite, confident coming into the season. But it seems like when they start turning the tires into corners, the downforce is stalled in the rear diffuser, which is why you have problems on corner entry. It sort of stabilizes mid corner, and then corner exit, they're all over the place. So you saw Lance Stroll. On the limit of adhesion with his really, really overfast steering rack, which he needs changing, he just dropped the car. Obviously, I don't think many other people would have not had a moment. It was quite, with the Williams, there's only so much you can do, but he had the moment. He dropped it, he recovered it, and then Hartley was on his outside with Hartley nowhere to go and then in the wall. But you've got to look at it and say, yes, Stroll's an idiot for losing the car and trying to hold Hartley off on lap one, but is Hartley also slightly as much of an idiot by putting his race in the hands of Lance Stroll, who we know is pretty much just the best racing driver the world has ever seen? He's trying to go around the outside of him on lap one in a torrid Williams, but then he wouldn't have known it was Lance Stroll on lap one. So again, it was Stroll. But the way Stroll came across, he got interviewed during the race by Jenny Gow, and he was like, "Ah." Oh, the car went loose on me and I corrected it, and Hartley ended up in the wall. I said, well, no, I think I tweeted this. I said, well, no, you dropped the car, you rammed Hartley into the wall, and Hartley was up in the air afterwards. It can get loose on you. You dropped the car. I know it's an unstable car, but you can't expect it. Oh, no, it just suddenly snapped. I mean, it's been snapping all weekend. You've been nowhere. You know what I mean? So, I think that could be curtains for Hartley now. That really could be it. Oh, it could be.
Yeah, I know. That's what I saw people tweeting. That is this Hart? That was Hartley's last chance, and he's bottled it again. It wasn't his fault personally. I thought it was Stroll completely, but Yeah, he was not happy looking. He didn't wasn't getting any interviews sort of after when he was in the he took his helmet off. So I thought, okay, maybe he will talk to someone. But he was saying no to any interviews that I when I was watching on Sky. But yeah, no, it's frustrating. And I think the fact that Claire Williams blamed Hartley completely in her interview with Sky Sports mid-race, I was like, oh, what are you chatting? Absolute rubbish, you are. But what I think Williams, it just. You know, they sacked the lead designer, they sacked one other heads of the departments, thinking, well, if you're sacking everybody, you're not going to get anywhere. That's, you know, if you want to maybe try and make the car more stable, I know Paddy Lowe has a plan apparently, but they seem to be getting worse and worse as the season is going on.
Yeah, it seems quite odd, you know. And Paddy, everyone regards Paddy Lowe as this technical genius because he went to Mercedes and did rather well. But let's remember that he also designed a few of McLaren's dogs as well. The 2011 car with those odd side pods. The 2013 car, I think, was his work. Yeah, because you went to Mercedes in 2013, so the 2013 car would have been mostly his work. And then he went to Mercedes, and I think he'd been glorified somewhat because of the team Mercedes. Ross Brawn had built that team up to have such a strong technical working partnership. Toto Wolff had to walk in, sort of just keep everything or make sure that everyone was doing their jobs, and everyone complemented each other really well, and it all just kind of worked. You put Paddy Lowe in another team again, it's back to his McLaren days where he's on and off, and I can't believe that he's done so little, you know, what appears to be so little to the Pat Simmons car, because you thought, right, Paddy Lowe's coming in, Pat Simmons gone, this is time now, Williams are coming back, and it just looks like he's touched the side pods a bit, and that's about it. So they're firing people left, right, and centre. I think the wrong heads are rolling, and it's just the legacy of Pat Simmons, and that the book needs to be rewritten. They need to have drivers who aren't inexperienced. You know, even if you put a really good rookie in there, they're still not going to give the level of feedback that Felipe Massa, for example, could give from last year to this year. He could be in there saying, you know, last year when this happened, I felt the car like this, and this year it feels slightly different in this way. You've got Lance Stroll in there who didn't develop last year. He hasn't developed this year. And Sergei Sorokin, who there's a reason he's been sitting on the sidelines for the last like 4 or 5 years, even though he's got all his Russian backing. You know, you don't sit on the sidelines for 4 years if you've got real talent. So, but you know, obviously he's good, but there's a line. There's only so much he can do himself with absolutely no experience. So, Stroll and Sorokin can be good on their good days, but when they've got a really difficult car and then the team needs someone to lead a direction or a development path, they're just stuck and they're just sitting in no man's land. But what they need to do, and what I feel they feel they need to do, is just write it off, start from a clean slate. But A, they haven't got the money to do that, and B, they can't afford to just stop working at a year and try and focus on the next year because the cash flow isn't there.
Do you think they should put Robert Kubica in the seat so they can have some more feedback about the car rather than having Stroll or Sorokin in the car?
Problem with Kubica is he's good and he showed some of his pace in Spain. But then again, in that same practice session, he spun the car as well, and he said it's embarrassing because, you know, Robert knows how a 2010 previous F1 car should handle. He has no experience of how ERS systems work or anything like that compared to a decent, you know, a current decent driver. So they really are limited with his options because Kubica, again, has a lot of racing experience and can talk and half lead a team, but they need someone who's actually half decent, someone like a Hülkenberg, someone like a Sainz. But of course, they're not going to go there, are they?
No.
But Kubica would be all right. But I think Kubica's and both Massa and Kubica are sort of sitting back and going, "Ooh, that's unfortunate." Glad I'm not in that car, and it's showing. You know, got to feel for Stroll and Sorokin somewhat because it's showing them up as being slightly worse than they are. But there will be opportunities for them to have standout performances per se. But when Stroll goes and bins it in the wall in free practice one, it's just like, mate, are you for real? The track's green and you're going and sticking it in the wall. And then his engineer came on the radio in FP2 and said, "Oh, you're going too fast into the last chicane. You're going to end up in the wall again." And I was like, all right then. It's
Yeah.
sad, but it's unfortunate. No one wants to see Williams where they are.
No one does. You know, everyone's got a sort of soft spot for Williams, and hopefully we do see him improve next year. But you know, it's the way Formula One goes, and hopefully they do with the new regs that are coming in. But we'll have to wait and see, really. The next incident was on after the restart. Sainz and Perez. So there was a little bit of contact, front wheels. Clashing going into turn one, and Perez spun off and he dropped quite a few places. But I was looking at it going, right, just a racing incident. And then Perez comes across the radio and goes, Sainz should have a black flag. So black flag, of course, means you should be disqualified from the race. I'm thinking, what have you been smoking, Perez, to say he needs a black flag? And it was just wheels clashed, and Perez seemed to turn in too early, and just spun. I think nothing wrong with it. It was just a racing incident for me.
Yeah, I mean, looking at black flag, that's what people felt Michael Schumacher should have had in 2010 when he almost put Barrichello in the wall at 180 miles. They kind of don't compare at all in terms of what Perez must have thought that he was slightly further ahead of Sainz. Of course, the visibility with that big iron girder across their face, that nice flip flop song, is probably pretty poor. And he probably thought he was a bit further alongside Sainz than he was. And maybe he thought, because of the whack he had and how far it put him off, he must have thought that Sainz sort of drove into his side, whereas he just squeezed Sainz maybe slightly too hard, or thought that Sainz would take a shallower line, but Sainz was like, well, I'm not having any of that. I'll just take my normal line, tar. And he got bounced across the thing because it was such a big incident. Perez probably sitting there going, oh my God, what the hell was that? And when he sees it back and gets interviewed after the race, it'll be, ah. I think, he's the first one to say, look, not that he's made a mistake, but it's very often he says things like that. So it must be something big for him to have thought that way. But he's very much a man not to hold grudges. He's good. He'll look back and say, ah, yeah, we could have done that a bit better, rather than doing a Max Verstappen and holding the fact that I don't change my driving style for six races, rather than saying, oh, like, yeah, I made a mistake, we move on. It's Perez is all right like that. He's gone through his stage like that. He's quite a man now.
You mentioned Max Verstappen, and of course finished on the podium today, and was very quick in all practices as well as in qualifying. And you said there as well that Max sort of kept the same driving style. He sort of changed sort of Monaco and also in Canada. Do you think Max has answered his critics now by doing a clean race and finishing on the podium?
It's exactly what he needed. A quiet podium is you couldn't have asked for any more than that. He was fastest in the sessions. Everyone sort of every time he put in a fast time, people were like, "Oh no, here we go, he's gonna go off." Or throughout the year, he's had bad luck. I think people look at Australia where he spun, and that was because there was a lot of damage to his car, and people don't seem to not remember that much. In Bahrain, yep, his fault both times. In China, yep, his fault, and he admitted in those first few. I think Bahrain, he did admit fault. China, he said, oh, look, yeah, I messed that up. I thought Seb was going in deep. And then I think one or two instances after that, he said, yep, that's my fault. And I'll have a look at what we're doing, and see where I'm going wrong. And people just keep banging the same drum. And it's like he's going to have Christian Horner banging the drum. He's going to have his chief engineer banging the drum. He's going to have his dad in his ear, who apparently is quite violent. So he's going to be banging the drum. And then you've got the journalist in the Daily Mail going, oh, why do you keep crashing? It's just like, fuck it up. I don't think. It's going to take a consistent run, four or five
Definitely.
races now where he's as composed as Daniel Ricciardo is on most weekends. He turns up, just does his job and goes, no big banzai stuff, just trying to get his level again, because it's the same, it's kind of the same thing that Grosjean's going through. You just need that one nice result and then the next nice result and then, oh, hang on, I'm back on the straight and narrow. Whereas when you're on one foot, it's really easy to get knocked over again. But as soon as you have this, now you can. They can look away and they can analyze it and go, yep, you were faster than Daniel all weekend. You did a fantastic job. There were no mistakes. Great job. And that's just a different, it's a change in mindset because, even drivers as experienced as Webber went through periods of just downward spirals and sort of a depression of form because they're just getting wrong result after wrong result. So it's really not what we want to see drivers go through. And Grosjean is just, he may put a brave face on for the camera, but he's completely at sea.
Oh
So,
yeah.
but Max is young enough and stubborn enough to say, do you know what? I'm going to headbutt you if you ask me another question about me crashing. I'm not,
Yeah, I
he has
saw that.
been
Brilliant.
in some cases a victim of circumstance. In some cases, yeah, he's taken a step too far and made a mistake. But we all know he's a fantastic talent. To say he's just going to crash all year is a bit silly. Perhaps he needs to, like he said himself at one point, he says, I need to maybe assess the situation for another couple of seconds and then make the move, which I thought was really brave after I think it was China or the race after that. So, I think this could be, it could be a return to form, but it's going to take four or five races of, yep, I can do this now. It's not me. I can, yeah, I'm all right. It's a self-confidence thing rather than thinking, oh, I've got to go for that position. So it's you'd be back on form in no time. I think it's a very momentary blip.
Yeah, I'm not. I definitely agree. And the next couple of circuits, I think, favour him. He's got essentially his home Grand Prix, and well, I say essentially Austria's coming up soon. We've also got France, Silverstone, Hungary, all coming up very soon. So hopefully,
Big
and
circuits, big
hopefully
circuits.
those races are far more exciting than the one we had in Canada today.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull might be a bit better in those places, but yes, you've got big straights, but they are very heavily aero dependent, which, obviously suits Red Bull, but then again, that doesn't suit the racing.
Yeah, that's a good point actually.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We'll see. We'll see. The rest of the race we discussed at the start, it was very boring. Everyone managing their tyres, unfortunately. Like I said, there was hardly any overtaking at all. But of course, the race got finished a little bit early today, actually, didn't it? The flag seemed to come out a lap or two early, and I was thinking, oh, what's going on? Who's waving the flag? And it was Chantelle Winnie, who is a model, who openly admitted to Martin Brundle that she doesn't like F1, she's only here for Lewis, which is totally fine, I understand that, but why would you employ someone to wave the flag? Maybe we're jumping the gun here. Someone could have told her he was a lap too early. I've got no idea, but why? Just get a professional to do it. Just get Charlie Whiting to do it, or get a race engineer. Get someone proper to do it. I get why they did it. F1 want to expand the brand and they want to get to more people, but just give it to a professional, honestly.
Yeah, it's not a hard job. She had one job and she messed it up. And it's like, wow, well done, darling. Thoughts go back to Lewis Hamilton's Instagram post a couple of years ago as to why she is there for him. And that'd be quite interesting. And but it's like someone's gone, oh, do you want to wave the flag? She's like, yes, yeah, sure.
A flag,
And
huh?
you just completely mess it up. And it's like, who's looking at the person waving the flag at the end of the race? No one goes, oh, I wonder who's waving the flag. No one's saying that. It's just like someone at the start of the race waving the green flag for them to go off in the formation. Like, yeah, people will look at that like they do in Le Mans. They get special people in, and there's time then to look at the guy waving the flag because it's the start of the race or the formation like that's good. No one's looking at the box person in the checkered flag box.
Oh no, silly.
So complete waste of time, especially when she openly admits to media that she has no interest in F1. It's like, oh, fuck, cracking job, cracking
Yeah,
job.
I know. I know. I think it sort of sums up the Canadian Grand Prix as well. It was massively sponsored. Like, the lights were star shapes because Heineken was sponsoring the event. I just felt it was sort of over-sponsored and overhyped with celebrities. It was just, yeah, I just thought.
Trying too hard.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they're doing it, and I understand that the Canadian market is huge for F1, but I think they just tried too hard, like you said, and yeah, it sort of left a sour taste in my mouth, I think. So hopefully the French Grand Prix is a little bit better in 2 weeks' time. Of course, the first time we're going there since 2008, so a long, long time. I don't actually remember the track. I started following F1 in about 2007, but long, long time since we've been there. Are we hoping for a better race? Oh, again, we do hope so, but judging by the track, Ashley, will it be a better race or will it be another bore fest?
The difficulty with the track, I mean, there's been a lot of Blancpain races and the GT cars go around there a lot, Formula Renault and stuff like that. It's all got this sort of blue high abrasive tarmac on the outside, so when cars spin they kind of just stop dead rather than hit the walls, because it was when they took it off the calendar, or it was revamped as a test track, an FAA sanctioned test track. So it's got things like sprinklers and skid pans and this special adhesive tarmac on the outside. But what it means is, because it's essentially now one massive thing of tarmac with a track painted on it, there's no, when you drive it and when you're watching it on TV, there's like no perspective. You don't know where people are because the camera angles are kind of weird as well. Like when you're looking at Canada, you're like, oh, I know that wall and corner or whatever, or even somewhere that is kind of tarmac ridden. When one of the newer tracks, like USA, for example, you can always tell where the cars are, even though that's got massive runoff. But in poor, it's poor Ricard, isn't it? Yeah, it just seems really odd when I watch it. That's when I watch it anyway. I can never kind of work out where they are until it's the last corner. That's the only place I can work out where people are. And then, of course, it's quite heavily aero dependent. There's a lot of sort of one line corners, put it that way. And track limits will be a big issue there as well, because of course if it's high abrasive tarmac on the outside of the track, then that's quite a good place to be. It's like the GT3 races that have been done the last few years, it's just been taking a piss with track limits. They just go right off and run right round. My biggest worry about it is I hope that, as you know, there's a big new French GP drive and Renault get involved, a big up like that, because it can go one of two ways. It'll either be like that, or it'll be like, oh wow, it really is their first time doing this, isn't it? One of those events, and you're like, ah yeah, this needs to be done better next year. And I hope it's not like that. I hope it's a massive big pomp circumstance Renault sort of job. And then again, they've split the straight up into the chicanes, so those chicanes are really, again, one line corner designed to take cars handling, not necessarily produce decent racing. And with these cars, heavily aero-dependent track, which is not got a lot of scope for driver talent. You know what I mean? You've got a Baku or Canada or Spa, and there's, you know, if you've got a really good driver, they're going to show their stance. You know, they're going to show what they can do. Or even Monza or something like that. You know, you've got a ballsy driver, they're going to hang it out around Paris, Bucker and Ascari. But in Paul Ricard, we'll see very much a performance-based race, because it was adapted to be a test track. So very much a bit like Spain, really, where you just get the fastest cars at the front and in pecking order, really. Yeah. So meaning McLaren will be at the back. Lol.
Yeah, be back with the Williams, won't they? Yeah. So predictions-wise, what do you fancy for the first French Grand Prix in almost 10 years?
Ferrari have very efficient aero now. Last year they had a lot of downforce, but they were slow. But their aero this year is efficient. If they have a decent power unit, and it can you know get the car together, because sometimes Ferrari have an off weekend, that'll be they'll be up there. It'll be between Ferrari and Mercedes for sure, because Mercedes will have their power upgrade there. Lewis Hamilton, when he has an off weekend like this, really good away, you know, clears his mind, the usual, does some music, whatever, makes a lot of money. Comes back and he's usually like on top, absolutely back on form. You know, as Nico pointed out, he didn't ask Nico while the race was on. So Rosberg said that this is just one of his typical off weekends. And we all have one, you know, in everyday life. But when Lewis has one, because he's so, you know, I'm not a Lewis fan, but because he's always at such a high level, when he does have one, he's very, very off the pace, like he was today, just in the middle of nowhere. You know, in terms of Lewis Hamilton form, he's in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, fighting for fourth or fifth is not bad on a good day. But so it'll be Mercedes with a new power unit upgrade, because that would have got them pole apparently in Canada, and that's a short track and Paul Ricard's a long track. It'll be between Ferrari and Mercedes, because Red Bull were losing 3 to 4 tenths in that back straight alone. And Canada's a 1 minute 10 lap. So that's a huge amount, you know, a tenth in F1 is a year. Yeah. So it's going to be tough for them, because it's not necessarily just the internal combustion engine, it's their ERS system. So in 2016, they ran the 2016 ERS. In 2017, they had to run the 2016 ERS because it wasn't well enough done. And for 2018, it wasn't ready again. So they're running the 2017 ERS, which is a bit better than 2016 ERS now. So when they've got the things like the chicanes, the long corners, they're going to be clipping all the time, because they've only got so much to fire out of each chicane or each long bend, and they'll run out of juice, and Mercedes and Ferrari can keep harvesting it and keep deploying, whereas Renault haven't got that. So their aero will help them. If they can get some clean air, their aero will help them. And then obviously Daniel and Max are, you know, they're top of the tree, really, in terms of how they can dance a car around. But I feel that will be more of a Mercedes and Ferrari dominated race.
Yeah, I think I could agree with you. Yeah, I think, like you said, you know, with all those different parts on the cars, Ferrari and Mercedes will sort of eke it out. And I think, like you said, Hamilton will bounce back. He always does when he has a bad Grand Prix. I think he'll hit the ground running. Especially, you know, with the problems he had with the engine, with the loss of power sections of the track. I think there was more with the battery issue rather than the actual engine. But yeah, I think it'll be, like you said, Ferrari and Mercedes and Red Bull will be sort of best of the rest then, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, we never know. It could be, I don't know what the weather's like, but it could, you know, anything can happen with an F1 race.
Oh yeah. I mean, if we get some weather, it'll be massively thrown up, and then Red Bull will come flying through
of course,
because
yeah.
the power is less then, and of course you've got those drivers who can just somehow pull the performance out of it, and that'll be really interesting. If we get some weather, it'll be a really interesting race. But the amount of aero performance there is there, I don't believe it'll be that good. You know what I mean? It's the kind of track where the corner keeps coming back at you, a bit like Valencia. It's just a really long corner, and they tighten and they widen, and it's a really technical track designed again to test cars, test chassis balance, and things like that. And that's really good when your aero regs are good. But yeah, I'm predicting a processional race, but I'm always a pessimist, so I'm hoping I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I mean the Formula One was sort of the worst part of motorsport this weekend. I know we had Rallycross this weekend, Formula E, F1, and also British touring cars, and F1 was definitely the worst of the pile. If
Yeah,
those
pinnacle.
who a lot of, I know a lot of people did watch the touring cars. Formula E is up and down. Rallycross is quite small still, but Formula E was very entertaining today. If you haven't watched it, first race in something like 50 years in Switzerland because of the ban they had. But yeah, on the last like 5 laps, five drivers have drive-through penalties because they sped under yellow flags. So that was it was intense.
Yeah, and you got Brundle saying anything without an engine isn't a sport, and you're like, ah. Yeah, should have outdone your sport by a mile, mate. And
Yeah,
then touring cars as well. Touring
exactly.
cars only have ballast and balance of performance rules and turbo boost things, but it's good racing and no one cares. You know, people just accept that cars are running ballast, and I know it's a bit false in terms of that aspect, but it's like if the driver with high ballast has a bad race, the ballast comes off. But then of course it's not a big Grand Prix weekend, is it? It's three races in a row, so it's, you know, again, it's a bit different in that respect. So I'm not saying you can put ballast on F1 cars. What I'm saying is, you know, Alan Gow has come in and he's had a fiddle around through the years, and it's all right. It's a good sport, and there's not a massive huge amount of money in it, and yet it produces good things. So there's some scope for Formula One to look at, right? And 2021 is going to be that. You know, there'll be spec parts where certain things are restricted to keep people like Force India and Williams in the sport. So we're getting there, but again, we're still in this Bernie legacy of just money, 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 spend, spend, spend. And Liberty know that, Ross Brawn know that, but of course, the big three teams and or the manufacturers at least have so much money invested that they're kind of reluctant to say before 2021 to say, ah, because that's when Bernie's Concorde contract agreement with them all runs out in 2020. See, so once that happens, then Liberty Media have complete full reign over it, and that's what we'll see in 2021. Will be the rebirth of Formula One. Let's say that.
Yeah, I think 2021 will be the first. I think that'll be one of the best seasons, I hope, we have, because it's all Liberty Media and no Bernie Eccleston at all. So hopefully, then we'll have a great season. But we'll have to wait and see. But finally, I know you don't compete in this, Ashley, due to your poor prediction of driver choices. But the Gridwatchers podcast, F1 League, that we do run. Unfortunately, as we're recording, because we're recording directly after the race, it's not updated. But all I know is I'm up to third somehow. Corsa dropped down to fourth because I've gained more points than him in this particular race. But I think Burnout Racing is still top with Ted Pett F1 Racing Team in second. So still
It's
plenty
rigged.
to
It's
play
all
for.
rigged. It's
Pardon?
all rigged.
All rigged,
It's all
yeah.
rigged. You've rigged it all.
I've spoken to the analytic guys in F1. Get me extra turbo drivers. That's what Yeah,
Oh,
so I'm somehow in third. So yeah, don't forget to change your teams, of course, every week. That'll be fantastic. But yeah, I think that sort of rounds it off for today's podcast. Let me know. Let us know your thoughts on the Grand Prix and everything we've talked about this on this podcast. And don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Give us a review. That'd be perfect. Check us out on YouTube. Check out the Grid Watchers Twitter account. Check out myself and Ashley and the rest of the guys in the description below. And we shall see you in 2 weeks' time. Go on.
May I just say one more point? Sorry. And the interesting thing to carry from here into the next couple of races is how quickly they'll drop Brendan Hartley through what I feel is not as much of a fault of his own, victim of circumstance, very much so. But again, I feel his time now is up, and you know, unfortunately, too soon, in my opinion, as I've said. But it could be Lando Norris, it could be Pascal Wehrlein within the next race, if not two races. People are talking about Silverstone as well, so we'll see how quickly that develops.
Yeah, will Brendan Hartley be here in 2 weeks' time? Let us know in the comment section below. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time for the French Grand Prix. Good night.